This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The Fates Divide by Veronica Roth. Performed by Austin Butler, Emily Rankin, Aaron Spencer, and McLeod Andrews.
Prologue. Aija. Why so afraid? We ask ourselves. She is coming to kill us, we reply. We were once alarmed by this feeling of being in two bodies at once. We have grown accustomed to it in the cycles since the shift occurred, since both our current gifts dissolved into this new, strange one. We know how to pretend, now, that we are two people instead of one, though we prefer, when we are alone, to relax into the truth. We are one person in two bodies. We are not on Uruk, as we were the last time we knew our location. We are adrift in space, the bend of the blushing current stream the only interruption in the blackness. Only one of our two cells has a window. It is a narrow thing, with a thin mattress in it, and a bottle of water. The other cell is a storage room that smells of disinfectant, harsh and acrid. The only light comes from the vents in the door. Closed now, but not fully sealed against the hallway glow. We stretch two arms, one shorter and browner, the other long and pale, in unison. The former feels lighter, the latter clumsy and heavy. The drugs have faded from one body, but not the other. One heart pounds hard, and the other maintains a steady rhythm. To kill us, we say to ourselves. Are we sure? As sure as the fates, she wants us dead. The fates. There is dissonance here. Just as a person can love and hate something at once, we love and hate the fates. We believe and do not believe in them. What was the word our mother used? We have two mothers, two fathers, two sisters, and yet only one brother. Accept your fate, or bear it, or suffer the fate, she said. We reply. For all else is delusion.
One. Sheathy. Verb. In Thuvazit, can, should, must. Chapter 1. Syra. Lazmet Noavek, my father and former tyrant of Shotet, had been presumed dead for over 10 seasons. We had held a funeral for him on the first sojourn after his passing, sent his old armor into space, because there was no body. And yet my brother, Rizek, imprisoned in the belly of this transport ship, had said, Lazmet is still alive. My mother had called my father Laz sometimes. No one else would have dared but Ilira Noavek. Laz, she would say, let it go. And he obeyed her, as long as she didn't command him too often. He respected her, though he respected no one else, not even his own friends. With her he had some softness, but with everyone else, well. My brother, who had begun his life soft and only later hardened into someone who would torture his own sister, had learned to cut out a person's eye from Lazmet, and how to store it, too. In a preservative, so it wouldn't rot. Before I truly understood what the jars in the weapons hall contained, I had gone there to look at them, on shelves high above my head, glinting in the low light. Green and brown and gray irises, afloat, like fish bobbing to the surface of a tank for food. My father had never carved a piece of someone with his own hands, nor had he ordered someone else to do it. He had used his current gift to control their bodies, to force them to do it to themselves. Death is not the only punishment you can give a person. You can also give them nightmares. When Akos Karasath came to find me, later, it was on the nav deck of the small transport ship that carried us away from my home planet, where my people, the Shotet, now stood on the verge of war with Akos's home nation of Thuva. I sat in the captain's chair, swiveling back and forth to soothe myself. I meant to tell him what Rizek had told me, that my father, if he was my father, if Rizek was even my brother, was alive. Rizek seemed certain that he and I didn't actually share blood, that I was not truly a Noavek. That was why, he had said, I hadn't been able to open the gene lock that kept his rooms secure, why I hadn't been able to assassinate him the first time I tried. But I didn't know how to begin. With the death of my father? With the body we had never found? With the niggling feeling that Rizek and I were too dissimilar in features to have ever been related? Akos didn't seem to want to talk either. He spread a blanket he had found somewhere in the ship, on the ground between the captain's chair and the wall, and we lay on top of it, side by side, staring out at nothingness. Current shadows, my lively, painful ability, wrapped around my arms like black string, sending a deep ache all the way down to my fingertips. I was not afraid of emptiness. It made me feel small, barely worth a first glance, let alone a second. And there was comfort in that, because so often I worried that I was capable of causing too much damage. At least, if I was small and kept to myself, I wouldn't do any more harm. I wanted only what was within arm's reach. Akos's index finger hooked around my pinky. The shadows disappeared as his current gift countered mine. Yes, what was within arm's reach was definitely enough for me.
"Would you say something in Thuvazit?" he asked.
I turned my head toward him. He was still looking up at the window, a faint smile curling his lips. Freckles dotted his nose, and one of his eyelids, right near the lash line. I hesitated with my hand just lifted off the blanket, wanting to touch him but also wanting to stay in the wanting for a moment. Then I followed the line of his eyebrow across his face with a fingertip. "I'm not a pet bird," I said. "I don't chirp on command."
"This is a request, not a command. A humble one," he said.
"Just say my full name, maybe?" I laughed. "Most of your name is Shotet, remember?"
"Right."
He lunged at my hand with his mouth, snapping his teeth together. It startled a laugh from me.
"What was hardest for you to say when you were first learning?"
"Your city names. What a mouthful," I said as he let go of one of my hands to catch the other, holding me by pinky and thumb with all his fingertips. He pressed a kiss to the center of my palm, where the skin was calloused from holding current blades. Strange that something so simple, given to a hardened part of me, could suffuse me so completely, bringing life to every nerve. I sighed, acquiescing.
"Fine, I'll say them. Hessa, Shissa, Ozok," I said.
There was a chancellor who called Hessa the very heart of Thuva. Her surname was Karasath.
"The only Karasath chancellor in Thuvazit history," Akos said,
bringing my palm to his cheek. I propped myself up on one elbow to lean over him, my hair slipping forward to frame both our faces, long on one side, though I was now silver-skinned on the other.
I do know that much.
For a long time, there were only two fated families on Thuva, I said. And yet, aside from that one exception, the leadership has only ever been with the Benazites, when the fates have named a chancellor at all. Is that not strange to you?
Maybe we aren't any good at leading.
Maybe fate favors you, I said. Maybe thrones are curses.
Fate doesn't favor me, he said gently.
So gently I almost didn't realize what he meant. His fate. The third child of the family Karaseth will die in service to the family Noavek. Was to betray his home for my family, in serving us, and to die. How could anyone see that as anything but a hardship? I shook my head. I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking, Syra, he said. Then he paused, frowning at me.
Did you just apologize?
I do know the words, I replied, scowling back. I'm not completely without manners, he laughed.
I know the Isandere word for garbage. That doesn't mean I sound right saying it.
Fine, I revoke my apology. I flicked his nose, hard, and when he cringed away, still laughing, I said, What's the Isandere word for garbage? He said it. It sounded like a word reflected in a mirror, said once forward and once backward.
I've found your weakness, he said. I just have to taunt you with knowledge you don't have, and you're distracted immediately.
I considered that. I guess you're allowed to know one of my weaknesses, considering you have so many to exploit. He raised his eyebrows in question, and I attacked him with my fingers, jabbing his left side just under his elbow, his right side just above his hip, the tendon behind his right leg. I had learned these soft places when we were training, places he didn't protect well enough, or that made him cringe harder than usual when struck. But I teased him now with more gentleness than I had thought myself capable of, drawing from him laughs instead of cringes. He pulled me on top of him, holding me by the hips. A few of his fingers slipped under the waistband of my pants, and it was a kind of agony I was unfamiliar with, a kind I didn't mind at all. I braced myself on the blanket, on either side of his head, and lowered myself slowly to kiss him. We hadn't kissed more than a few times, and I had never kissed anyone but him, so each time was still a discovery. This time I found the edge of teeth, skimming, and the tip of a tongue. I found the slide of a knee between mine, and the weight of a hand at the back of my neck, urging me closer, further, faster. I didn't breathe, didn't want to take the time, and so I ended up gasping against the side of his neck before long, making him laugh.
I'll take that as a good sign, he said.
Don't get cocky, Karaseth. I couldn't keep myself from smiling. Lazmet, and whatever questions I had about my parentage, didn't feel as close to me now. I was safe here, floating on a ship in the middle of nowhere, with Akos Karaseth. And then, a scream from somewhere deep in the ship. It sounded like Akos's sister, Sisi.
Chapter 2. Sisi. I know what it is to watch your family die. I am Sisi Karaseth, after all. I watched Dad die on our living room floor. I watched Aija and Akos get dragged away by Shotet soldiers. I watched Mom fade like fabric in the sun. There's not much I don't understand about loss. I just can't express it the way other people do. My current gift keeps me all wrapped up tight. So I'm a little bit jealous of how Issei Benazit, fated Chancellor of Thuva, and my friend, can let herself grieve. She wears herself out with emotion. And then we fall asleep, shoulder to shoulder, in the galley of the Shotet exile ship. When I wake up, my back hurts from slumping against the wall for so long. I get up and lean to the left, to the right, while I take note of her. Issei doesn't look right, which I guess makes sense since her twin sister, Ori, died only yesterday, in an arena of Shotet all chanting for her blood. She doesn't feel right either. The texture around her all fuzzy, like the way your teeth feel when you haven't brushed them. Her eyes skip back and forth over the room, dancing across my face and body, and not in a way that would make a person blush. I try to calm her with my current gift, sending out a smooth feeling, like unrolling a skein of silk thread. It doesn't seem like it does much good. My current gift is an odd thing. I can't know how she feels, not really, but I can feel it, like it's a texture in the air. And I can't control how she feels either, but I can make suggestions. Sometimes it takes a couple of tries, or a new way of thinking about it. So instead of silk, which had no effect, I try water. Heavy. Undulating. It's a bust. She's too keyed up. Sometimes when a person's feelings are too intense, it's hard for me to make an impact. CZ, can I trust you? It's a funny word in Thuvazit. Can. It's can and should and must all squished together. And you can only suss out the true meaning from context. It leads to misunderstanding sometimes, which is probably why our language is described by off-worlders as slippery. That, and off-worlders are lazy. So when Issei Benazit asks me in my mother tongue if she can trust me, I don't really know what she means. But regardless, there's only one answer. Of course. I mean it, CZ, she says, in that low voice she uses when she's serious. I like that voice, the way it hums in my head. There's something I have to do, and I want you to come with me, but I'm afraid you won't be... Issei, I cut her off. I'm here for you, whatever you need. I touch her shoulder with gentle fingers. Okay? She nods. She leads me out of the galley, and I try not to step on any kitchen knives. After she shut herself in here, she ripped all the drawers out, broke everything she could get her hands on. The floor is covered with shreds of fabric and pieces of glass and cracked plastic and unrolled bandages. I guess I don't blame her. My current gift keeps me from doing or saying things that I know will make people uncomfortable, which means that, after my dad died, I couldn't cry unless I was alone. I couldn't say much of anything to my mom for months. So if I'd been able to destroy a kitchen, like Issei did, I probably would have. I follow Issei out, quiet. We walk past Ori's body. It has a sheet tucked nicely around it, so it's just the slopes of her shoulders, the bump of her nose and chin. Just an impression of who she was. Issei stops there, draws a sharp breath. She feels even grittier now than she did before, like grains of sand against my skin. I know I can't soothe her, but I'm too worried about her not to try. I send airy, feathergrass tufts and hard, polished wood. I send warm oil and rounded metal. Nothing works. I chafe against her, frustrated. Why can't I do anything to help her? I think, for a tick, of asking for help. Akos and Syra are right there on the nav deck. Mom somewhere below. Even Akos and Syra's renegade friend, Tekka, is right there, stretched out on the bench seats with a sheet of white blonde hair sprawled across behind her. But I can't call out to any of them. For one thing, I just can't. Can't knowingly cause distress, thanks to my gift curse. And for another, instinct tells me it's better if I can earn Issei's trust. Issei leads us down below, where there are two storage rooms and a washroom. Mom's in the washroom. I can tell by the sound of the recycled water splattering. In one storage room, the one with the window, I made sure of that, is my other brother, Aija. It hurt me to see him again, so long after his kidnapping, and so small compared to the pale pillar of Rizek Noavak next to him. You think when people get older, they're supposed to get stronger, fatter. Not Aija. The other storage room, the one with all the cleaning supplies, holds Rizek Noavak. Just knowing he's that close, the man who ordered my brothers taken and my dad killed, makes me tremble. Issei pauses between the two doors, and it hits me then that she's going in one of those rooms. And I don't want her to go in Aija's. I know he's the one who killed Ori, technically. That is, he was holding the knife that did it. But I know my brother. He could never kill anyone, especially not his best friend from childhood. There has to be some other explanation for what happened. It has to be Rizek's fault. Issei, I say, what are you? She touches three fingers to her lips, telling me to hush. She's right between the rooms. Deciding something, it seems like, judging by the faint buzz around her. She takes a key from her pocket. She must have lifted it off Tekka when she went out to make sure we were headed to assembly headquarters, and sticks it in the lock for Rizek's cell. I reach for her hand. He's dangerous, I say. I can handle it, she replies, and then, softening around the eyes, I won't let him hurt you. I promise. I let her go. There's a part of me that's hungry to see him, to meet the monster at last. She opens the door, and he's sitting against the back wall, sleeves rolled up, feet outstretched. He has long, skinny toes and narrow ankles. I blink at them. Are sadistic dictators supposed to have vulnerable-looking feet? If Issei's at all intimidated, she doesn't let on. She stands with her hands clasped in front of her, and her head high. My, my, Rizek says, running his tongue over his teeth. Resemblance between twins never fails to shock me. You look just like Orieva Benazit, except for those scars, of course. How old are they? 2 seasons, Issei says, stiff. She's talking to him. She's talking to Rizek Noavak, my sworn enemy, kidnapper of her sister, with a long line of kills tattooed on the outside of his arm. They will fade still, then, he says. A shame. They made a lovely shape. Yes, I'm a work of art, she says. The artist was a Shotet fleshworm who had just finished digging around in a pile of garbage. I stare at her. I've never heard her say something so hateful about the Shotet before. It's not like her. Fleshworm is what people call the Shotet when they're reaching for the worst insult. Fleshworms are gray, wriggly things that feed on the living from the inside out. Parasites, all but eradicated by Otherian medicine. Ah. His smile grows wider, forcing a dimple into his cheek. There's something about him that sparks in my memory. Maybe something he has in common with Syra, though they don't look at all alike, at a glance. So this grudge you have against my people isn't merely in your blood? No. She sinks into a crouch, resting her elbows on her knees. She makes it look graceful and controlled, but I'm worried about her. She's long and willowy in build, not near as strong as Rizek, who is big, though thin. One wrong move, and he could lunge at her. And what would I do to stop it? Scream? You know about scars, I suppose, she says, nodding to his arm. Will you mark my sister's life? The inside of his forearm, the softer, paler part, doesn't have any scars. They start on the outside and work their way around, row by row. He has more than one row.
Why? Have you brought me a knife and some ink?
Issei purses her lips. The sandpaper feeling she gave off a moment ago turns as jagged as a broken stone. By instinct, I press back against the door and find the handle behind my back. Do you always claim kills you didn't actually carry out? Issei says, because last time I checked, you weren't the one on that platform with the knife. Rizek's eyes glint.
I wonder if you've ever actually killed at all, or if all that work is done by others.
Her head tilts.
Others who, unlike you, actually have the stomach for it.
It's a Shotet insult, the kind a Thuvazit wouldn't even realize was insulting. Rizek picks up on it, though, eyes boring into hers.
Miss Kariseth, he says without looking at me, you look so much like the elder of your two brothers.
He glances at me then, appraising.
Are you not curious what's become of him?
I want to answer coolly, like Rizek is nothing to me. I want to meet his eyes with strength. I want 1,000 fantasies of revenge to come suddenly to life like hush flowers at the blooming. I open my mouth, but nothing comes out. Fine, I think, and I let out a peal of my current gift like a clap of my hands. I've come to understand that not everybody can control their current gifts the way I can. I just wish I could master the part that keeps me from saying what I want to. I see how he relaxes when my gift hits him. It has no effect on Issei, none that I can see anyway, but maybe it will loosen his tongue. And whatever Issei is planning, she seems to need him to talk first.
My father, the great Lazmet Noavak, taught me that people can be like blades, if you learn to wield them, but your best weapon should still be yourself.
Rizek says,
I have always taken that to heart. Some of the kills I have commanded have been carried out by others, Chancellor, but rest assured, those deaths are still mine.
He slumps forward over his knees, clasping his hands between them. He and Issei are just breaths apart.
I will mark your sister's life on my arm, he says. It will be a fine trophy to add to my collection.
Ori. I remember which tea she drank in the morning, Harva bark, for energy and clarity, and how much she hated the chip in her front tooth. And I hear the chants of the Shotet in my ears. Die. Die. Die.
That clarifies things, Issei says.
She holds her hand out for him to take. He gives her an odd look, and no wonder. What kind of person wants to shake hands with a man who just admitted to ordering her sister's death? And being proud of it.
You really are an odd one, he says. You must not have loved your sister very much to offer your hand to me now.
I see the skin pull taut over the knuckles of her other hand, the one not held out to him. She opens her fist and inches her fingers toward her boot. Rizek takes the hand she offered, then stiffens, eyes widening.
On the contrary, I loved her more than anyone, Issei says.
She squeezes him hard, digging in her fingernails. And all the while, her left hand moves toward her boot. I'm too stunned to realize what's happening until it's too late. With her left hand, she tugs a knife out of her boot, from where it's strapped to her leg. With her right, she pulls him forward. Knife and man come together, and she presses, and the sound of his gurgling moan carries me to my living room, to my adolescence, to the blood that I scrubbed from the floorboards as I sobbed. Rizek slumps and bleeds. I slam my hand down on the door handle and stumble into the hallway. I am wailing, crying, pounding on the walls. No, I'm not. My current gift won't let me. All it allows me to do, in the end, is let out a single, weak scream.
Chapter 3. Syra. I ran toward CZ Karaseth's scream, Akos on my heels, not even bothering with the rungs on the ladder that took me below deck. I just jumped down. I went straight toward Rizek's cell, knowing, of course, that he was likely the source of anything that caused screaming on this ship. I saw CZ braced against the corridor wall, the storage room door across from her open. Behind her, Tekka dropped down from the other end of the ship, beckoned here by the same noise. Issei Benazit stood inside Rizek's cell, and below her, in a jumble of legs and arms, was my brother. There was a certain amount of poetry in it, I supposed, that just as Akos had watched his father spill his life on the floor, so I now watched my brother do the same. It took far longer for him to die than I anticipated. That was intentional, I assumed. Issei Benazit stood over his body the entire time, bloody knife in her fist, eyes blank but watchful. She had wanted to take her time with this moment, her moment of triumph over the one who killed her sister. Well, one of the ones who killed her sister, because Aija, who had held the actual blade, was still in the next room. Rizek's eyes found mine, and almost as if he'd touched me, I was buoyed into a memory, not one that he was taking from me, but one I had almost hidden from myself. I was in the passage behind the weapons hall, with my eye pressed to the crack in the wall panel. I had gone there to spy on my father's meeting with a prominent Shotet businessman turned slumlord, because I often spied on my father's meetings when I was bored and curious about the happenings of this house. But this meeting had gone bad, which had never happened before when I peeked in. My father had stretched out a hand, two fingers held aloft, like a Zoldan ascetic about to give a blessing, and the businessman had drawn his own knife, his movements jerky, like he was fighting his own muscles. He brought the knife to the inside corner of his eye. "Syra!" hissed a voice behind me, making me jerk to attention. A young, spotted Rizek slid to his knees beside me. He cradled my face in his hands. I had not realized, before that moment, that I was crying. As the screaming started in the next room, he pressed his palms flat to my ears and brought my face to his chest. I struggled at first, but he was too strong. All I could hear was the pounding of my own heart. At last he pulled me away, wiped the tears from my cheeks, and said, "What does Mother always say? Those who go looking for pain find it every time," I replied, completing the phrase. Tekka held me by the shoulders and jostled me a little, saying my name. I looked at her then, confused. "What is it?" I said. "Your current shadows were..." She shook her head. "Never mind." I knew what she meant. My current gift had likely gone haywire, sending sprawling black lines all over me. The current shadows had changed since Rizek tried to use me to torture Akos in the cell block beneath the amphitheater. They drifted on top of my skin now, instead of burrowing beneath it like dark veins. But they were still painful, and I could tell this episode had been worse. My vision was blurry, and there were impressions of fingernails in my palms. Akos was kneeling in my brother's blood, his fingers on the side of Rizek's throat. I watched as his hand fell away, and he slumped, bracing himself on his thighs. "It's done," Akos said, sounding thick, like his throat was coated in milk. "After everything Syra did to help me, after everything..."
"I won't apologize," Issei said, finally looking away from Rizek. She scanned all our faces. Akos, surrounded by blood. Tekka, wide-eyed at my shoulder. Me, arms streaked black. Sizi, holding her stomach near the wall. The air was pungent with the smell of sick.
"He murdered my sister," Issei said. "He was a tyrant and a torturer and a killer. I won't apologize."
"It's not about him. You think I didn't want him dead?"
Akos lurched to his feet. Blood ran down the front of his pants, from knees to ankles.
"Of course I did. He took more from me than he did from you."
He was so close to her, I wondered if he would lash out. But he made a fitful motion with his hands, and that was all.
"I wanted him to fix what he did first. I wanted him to set Aija right. I..."
It seemed to hit him all at once. Rizek was, had been, my brother. But the grief was his. He had persevered, carefully orchestrated every element of his brother's rescue, only to find himself blocked again and again by people more powerful than he was. And now, he had succeeded in getting his brother out of Shotet. But he had not saved him, and all the planning, all the fighting, all the trying was for nothing. Akos fell against the nearest wall to hold himself up, closed his eyes, and swallowed a moan.
I found my way out of my trance.
"Go upstairs," I said to Issei. "Take Sizi with you."
She looked like she might object for a moment, but it didn't last. Instead, she dropped the murder weapon, a simple kitchen knife, right where she stood, and went to Sizi's side.
"Tekka," I said, "would you get Akos upstairs, please?"
"Are you?"
Tekka started, and stopped.
"Okay."
Issei and Sizi, Tekka and Akos, they left me there, alone. With my brother's body. He had died next to a mop and a bottle of disinfectant. How convenient, I thought, and stifled a laugh. Or tried to. But it wouldn't stay stifled. In moments, my knees were weak with laughter, and I fumbled through my hair for the side of my head that was now silver skin, to remind myself how he had sliced and diced me for the entertainment of a crowd, how he had planted pieces of himself inside me, as if I was just a barren field to sow with pain. My entire body carried the scars Rizek Noavec had given me. And now, at last, I was free of him. When I calmed, I set about cleaning up Issei Benazit's mess. Rizek's body didn't frighten me, and neither did blood. I dragged him by his legs into the hallway, sweat tickling the back of my neck as I heaved and pulled. He was heavy in death, as I was sure he had been in life, skeletal though he was. When Akos's oracle mother, Sifa, appeared to help me, I didn't say anything to her,
just watched as she worked a sheet beneath him so we could wrap him in it. She produced a needle and thread from the storage room and helped me stitch the makeshift burial sack closed. Shotet funerals, when they took place on land, involved fire, like most cultures in our varied solar system. But it was a special honor to die in space, on the sojourn. We covered the bodies, all but the head, so the loved ones of whoever was lost could see and accept the person's death. When Sifa pulled the sheet back, away from Rizek's face, I knew she had at least studied our customs.
I see so many possibilities for how things will unfold, Sifa said finally, dragging her arm across her forehead to catch some of the sweat. I didn't think this one was likely, or I might have warned you.
No, you wouldn't have, I said, lifting a shoulder. You only intervene when it suits your purposes. My comfort and ease don't matter to you.
Syra.
I don't care, I said. I hated him. Just don't pretend that you care about me.
I am not pretending, she replied.
I had thought, surely, that I might see some of Akos in her, and in her mannerisms, yes, perhaps he was there. Mobile eyebrows and quick, decisive hands. But her face, her light brown skin, her modest stature, they were not his. I didn't know how to evaluate her honesty, so I didn't bother. Help me carry him to the trash chute, I said. I took the heavy side of his body, his head and shoulders, and she took his feet. It was lucky that the trash chute was only a few feet away, another unexpected convenience. We took it in stages, a few steps at a time. Rizek's head lolled around, his eyes open but sightless, but there was nothing I could do about it. I set him down next to the chute, and pressed the button to open the first set of doors, at waist height. It was fortunate that he was so narrow, or his shoulders wouldn't have fit. Together, Sifa and I folded him into the short channel, bending his legs so the inner doors would be able to close. Once they had, I pressed the button again, to open the outer doors and slide the tray in the chute forward to launch his body into space.
I know the prayer, if you want me to say it, Sifa said. I shook my head.
They said that prayer at my mother's funeral, I said. No.
Then let us just acknowledge that he has suffered his fate, Sifa said. To fall to the family Benazit. He no longer needs to fear it.
It was kind enough. I'm going to clean myself up, I said. The blood on my palms was beginning to dry, making them itch.
Before you do, Sifa said, I will warn you of this. Rizek was not the only person the Chancellor blamed for her sister's death. In fact, she likely began with him because she was saving the more important piece of retribution for later. And she won't stop there, either. I have seen enough of her to know her nature, and it is not forgiving.
I blinked at her for a moment before it made sense to me. She was talking about Aija, still locked away in the other storage room. And not just Aija, but the rest of us. Complicit, Issei believed, in Orieva's death.
There is an escape pod, Sifa said. We can put her in it, and someone from the assembly will fetch her.
Tell Akos to drug her, I said. I don't feel up to a fight right now.
Chapter 4. Akos. Akos waded through the cutlery that was all over the galley floor. The water was already heating, and the vial of sedative was ready to dump into the tea. He just had to get some dried herbs into the strainer. The ship bumped along, and he stepped on a fork, flattening the tines with his heel. He cursed his stupid head, which couldn't stop telling him that there was still hope for Aija. There are so many people across the galaxy, with so many gifts. Somebody will know how to put him right. Truth was, Akos was tired of hanging on to hope. He'd been clawing at it since he first got to Shertet, and now he was ready to let go, and just let fate take him where it wanted him to go. To death, and Noavex, and Shertet. All he'd promised his dad was that he would get Aija home. Maybe here, floating in space, was the best he could do. Maybe that would just have to be enough. But... Shut up, he said to himself, and he dumped the herbs from the galley cabinet into a strainer. There weren't any ice flowers, but he'd learned enough about Shertet plants to make a simple calming blend. At this point, though, there was no artistry in it. He was just going through the motions, folding bits of garlic root into powdered fenzu shell and squeezing a little nectar on top of it all for taste. He didn't even know what to call the plants that made up the nectar. He'd taken to calling the little fragile flowers mush flowers while he was at the army training camp outside Voa, because of how easily they fell apart. But he'd never learned the right name for them. They tasted sweet, and that seemed to be their only use. When the water was hot, he poured it through the strainer. The extract it left behind was a murky brown, perfect for hiding the yellow of the sedative. His mom had told him to drug Issei, and he hadn't even asked why. He didn't care, as long as it got her out of his sight. He couldn't quite escape the image of her standing there watching Rizek Noavek gush blood like it was some kind of show. Issei Benazit may have worn Ori's face, but she wasn't anything like her. He couldn't imagine Ori just standing there and watching someone die, no matter how much she hated them. Once the extract was brewed and mixed with the drug, he brought it to Sisi, who was sitting alone on the bench just outside the galley. "You waiting for me?" he said. "Yeah," she said. "Mom told me to." "Good," he said. "Will you take this to Issei? It's just to calm her down." Sisi raised an eyebrow at him. "Don't drink any of it yourself," he added. She reached for it, but instead of taking the mug, she put her hand on his wrist. The look in her eyes changed, sharpened, like it always did when his current gift dampened her own. "What's left of Aija?" she asked. Akos's whole body clenched up. He didn't want to think about what was left of Aija. "Someone who served Rizek Noavek," he said with venom. "Who hated me and Dad and probably you and Mom too." "How is that possible?" she frowned. "He can't hate us just because someone put different memories into his head." "You think I know?" Akos all but growled. "Then maybe he held me down while someone tortured me." Akos shoved the mug into her hands. Some of the hot tea spilled on both their hands. Sisi jerked away, wiping her knuckles on her pants. "Did I burn you?" he said, nodding to her hand. "No," she said. The softness her current gift brought to her expression was back. Akos didn't want tenderness of any kind, so he turned away. "This won't hurt her, will it?" Sisi said, tapping a fingernail on the mug so he would hear the ting, ting, ting. "No," he said. "It's to keep from having to hurt her." "Then I'll give it to her," Zizi said. Akos grunted a little. There was some more sedative in his pack. Maybe he ought to take it. He'd never been so worn, like a half-finished weaving, light showing between all the threads. It would be easier just to sleep. Instead of drugging himself to oblivion, though, he just took a dried hush flower petal from his pocket and stuck it between his cheek and his teeth. It wouldn't knock him out, but it would dull him some. Better than nothing. Akos was coasting on hush flower an hour later when Zizi came back. It's done, she said. She's out. All right, he said. Then let's get her into the escape pod. I'm going with her, Zizi said. If Mom's right, and we're headed into war, Mom's right. Yeah, Zizi said. Well, in that case, whoever's against Issei is against Thuva, so I'm going to stick with my chancellor. Akos nodded. I take it you won't be, Zizi said. Fated traitor, remember? He said. Akos. She crouched in front of him. At some point he had sat down on the bench, which was hard and cold and smelled like disinfectant. Zizi rested an arm on his knee. She had tied her hair back, messy, and a chunk of curls had come loose, falling around her face. She was pretty, his sister. Her face a shade of cool brown that reminded him of Trellin pottery. A lot like Cyrus, and Aegis, and Jorax. Familiar. You don't have to do anything you don't want to. Just because Mom raised us fate faithful and obedient to the oracles and all that, Zizi said. You're a Thuvazit. You should come with me. Leave everyone else to their war, and we'll go home and wait it out. No one needs us here. He'd thought about it. He was as torn now as he'd ever been, and not just because of his fate. When he came out of the daze of the hush flower, he would remember how nice it felt to laugh with Syra earlier that day, and how warm she was, pressed up against him. And he would remember that as much as he wanted to just be in his house again, walk up the creaky stairs and stoke the burnstones in the courtyard, and send flour up into the air as he needed the bread. He had to live in the real world. In the real world, Aja was broken. Akos spoke Shotet, and his fate was still his fate. Suffer the fate, he said, for all else is delusion. Zizi sighed. Thought you might say that. Sometimes delusion's nice, though. Stay safe, okay? He said, taking her hand. I hope you know I don't want to leave you again. It's pretty much the last thing I want. I know. She squeezed his thumb. I still have faith, you know, that one day you'll come home, and Aja will be better, and Mom will stop with the oracle bullshit, and we can cobble together something again. Yeah. He tried to smile for her. He might have halfway accomplished it. She helped him get Issei settled in the escape pod, and Tekka told her how to send out a distress signal so the pod would be picked up by assembly goons, as Tekka called them. Then Zizi kissed their mom goodbye, and wrapped her arms tight around Akos's middle until her warmth was pushed all the way through him. You're so damn tall, she said softly as she pulled away. Who told you that you could be so much taller than me? I did it just to spite you, he replied with a grin. Then she got in the pod and closed the doors. And he didn't know when he would ever see her again. Tekka tripped up to the captain's chair on the nav deck and pried the cover of the control panel off with a wedge tool she kept on her belt. She did it while whistling. "What are you doing?" Syra asked. "Now's not really the time to take apart our ship. First, this is my ship, not ours," Tekka said with a roll of her blue eye. "I designed most of the features that have kept us alive so far. Second, do you really still want to go to assembly headquarters?" "No," Syra said in the first officer's chair to Tekka's right. "The last time I went there, I overheard the representative from Trella call my mother a piece of filth. She didn't think I could understand her, even though she was speaking Otherian." "Figures," Tekka made a scoffing sound in the back of her throat as she pulled out a handful of wires from the control panel, then ran her fingers down them like she was petting an animal. She reached under the wires, to a part of the control panel Akos couldn't see. So far, her entire arm disappeared. A projection of coordinates flashed up ahead, glowing right across the current stream in their sights. The ship's nose. Akos was sure there was a technical name for it, but he didn't know it, so he called it a nose. Drifted so they were moving toward the current stream instead of away. "You going to tell us where we're headed?" Akos said, stepping up to the nav deck. The control panel was lit up in all different colors, with levers and buttons and switches everywhere. If Tekka had spread her arms wide, she still wouldn't have been able to reach all of them from where she sat. "I guess I can, since we're all stuck in this together now," Tekka said. She gathered her bright hair on top of her head and tied it with a thick band she wore around her wrist, swimming in a technician's coveralls. With her legs folded up beneath her on the captain's chair, she looked like a kid playing pretend. "We're going to the exile colony, which is on Agra." Agra. The Shadow Planet, people called it. It was rare to meet an Agran, let alone fly a ship in sight of Agra. It was as far from Thuva as any planet could be without leaving the safe band of current stream that encircled the solar system. No amount of surveillance could poke through its dense, dark atmosphere, and it was a wonder they could get any signal from the news feed. They never fed any stories into it either, so almost no one had ever seen the planet's surface, even in images. Syra's eyes, of course, lit up at the information. Agra? But how do you communicate with them? The easiest way to transmit messages without the government listening in is through people, Tekka said. That's why my mom was on board the Sojourn ship, to represent the exiles' interest among the renegades. We were trying to work together. Anyway, the exile colony is a good place for us to regroup, figure out what's going on back in Voa. I have a guess, Akos said, crossing his arms. Chaos. And then more chaos, Tekka said with a sage nod, with a short break in between. For chaos, of course. He couldn't imagine what Voa looked like now that, the Shotet believed, Rizek Noavek had been assassinated by his younger sister right in front of them. That was how it had looked, anyway, when Syra cut her brother in the arena, waiting for the sleeping elixir she had arranged for him to drink that morning to kick in and knock him flat. The standing army might have taken over, under the leadership of Vakrez Noavek, Rizek's older cousin, or those who lived on the outer edges of the city might have taken to the streets to fill the power vacuum. Either way, Akos imagined streets full of broken glass and blood spatter and ripped paper floating in the wind. Syra tipped her forehead into her hands. "And Lazmet," she said. Tekka's eyebrows popped up. "What?" Before Rizek died, Syra gestured vaguely toward the other end of the ship where Rizek had met his end. He told me my father is still alive. Syra didn't